I know there's been a lot of speculation what I'm going to do. I want to tell you first, I'm running for governor of Alaska.
Former Senator Mark Begich files to run for governor about 30 minutes before the deadline. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, former state representative Zach Fansler is pleading guilty, but not for assault.
Under that particular provision, he'll be pleading to the charge of subjecting another person to offensive physical contact.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
Two big names in Alaska politics have jumped into the race for governor on today's filing deadline. The cutoff for candidates hoping to run in this fall's elections was 5 p.m., and joining the list of gubernatorial hopefuls getting in just under the wire today were former U.S. Senator Mark Begich and former Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell. Begich and Treadwell are among 10 others hoping to unseat incumbent Governor Bill Walker, who is running as an independent. Begich, a Democrat, was mayor of Anchorage from 2003 to 2009 when he won a seat in the U.S. Senate, narrowly defeating longtime Senator Ted Stevens. Begich served one term, losing his re-election bid to current Senator Dan Sullivan in 2014. But now Begich is getting back into Alaska politics. He showed up at the Anchorage office of the Division of Elections to file for the race at 4:29 this afternoon, pointing out he had 31 minutes to spare.
I see huge opportunity, but I don't see a vision. I don't see where we're heading in the next 20 years. And I believe I can bring a new voice and a fresh voice to the governor's race that I think is desperately needed.
Begich's late Friday filing to run in the Democratic primary convinced Walker, the incumbent governor, to not run in that primary election. Despite winning a court battle over whether he could enter the Democratic primary at all, Walker's campaign spokesperson says he is, quote, staying the course and running only in the general. That sets up what will ostensibly be a three-way race between Walker and the winners of the Democratic and Republican primaries. The list of Republican candidates includes former Mat-Su State Senator Mike Dunleavy, Anchorage businessman Scott Hawkins, and as of today, former Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell. Treadwell describes himself as a conservative businessman and was the state's second in command from 2010 to 2014. He also ran for U.S. Senate, but lost to Sullivan in the 2014 Republican primary. In a letter to Alaskans announcing his run, Treadwell said, "I'm more than a one-issue candidate, but let me say up front, I will protect your dividend." Both parties' primary elections will be held August 21st, with the general election set for November 6th. Yesterday, before the new additions to the governor's race, candidates faced off in one of the first gubernatorial debates of the election season. Governor Bill Walker, former state Senator Mike Dunleavy, and businessman Scott Hawkins attended the debate at the Alaska Oil and Gas Association's annual conference in Anchorage. Dunleavy and Hawkins criticized Walker's policies toward China and the proposed Alaska LNG project. Dunleavy questioned whether the state is able to handle its lead role in pursuing the gas line.
I've got to be honest with you, I don't have faith in the administration that they're going to be able to pull this off with the folks they have in place and the expertise. And that greatly concerns me, and I think it concerns folks in this room and folks outside of this room.
The Walker administration is negotiating with Chinese entities to help finance the gas line, and the governor just returned from a trade mission to China. Hawkins says China is a geopolitical rival of the United States and argued the nation shouldn't get too involved.
We have to be very careful what role they play in the project. It's well and good that they buy LNG from us. It's okay if there's a small minority role that they play in the project, but to give them much control or much influence over the project would be a grave strategic error, I believe.
Walker defended China's involvement in the project, saying it will have a minority role in Alaska LNG, and noted the nation is the state's top trading partner. The governor said he's proud of how his administration has handled the project.
We made historic progress on a gas line. And I know I get accused of being a little fixated on the gas line. You know, it's the opportunity. It's an incredible opportunity for this state. And if we let that opportunity go by and we don't monetize that gas, shame on us.
The wide-ranging debate also touched on topics like crime, education, the opioid epidemic, and tax policy. With minutes to go before the Division of Elections deadline, several challengers had filed for the seat held by Congressman Don Young. Young is running for re-election and had about $500,000 in his campaign account as of April 1st. The challengers running in the Democratic primary include public schools advocate Elise Galvin and retired accountant Dimitri Shane, both of Anchorage. Carol Hafner has also filed for the seat as a Democrat. She lists a mailbox in Elder, South Dakota as her address. Hafner's website describes her as a retired education administrator and a biotech professional. In the Republican race for the U.S. House are Young and Jed Whitaker. Whitaker has previously run for office as a Green Party candidate. Gregory Jones of Anchorage and Gregory Fitch of Juneau have withdrawn from the Democratic primary. Neither of Alaska's U.S. Senate seats will be on the ballot this year. Almost 6 months after he was accused of slapping a woman in his hotel room, former House District 38 Representative Zach Fansler is pleading guilty, though not to assault. In a conversation with KYUK this afternoon, state ethics attorney Maria Barr said Fansler has agreed to plead guilty to one count of harassment in the second degree, which is a misdemeanor charge.
Under that particular provision, he'll be pleading to the charge of subjecting another person to offensive physical contact.
She added that this particular charge applies to, quote, offenses against public order, whereas an assault charge applies to an offense against a person. Fansler, a Democrat, resigned his seat in the state house after a woman accused him of drunkenly hitting her, rupturing her eardrum. Alaska's Office of Special Prosecutions has been reviewing the incident for several months. Attorney Barr says Fansler doesn't have a court date yet, but that his change of plea will take place in Juneau. Alaska's oil industry has specially designed its operations for freezing conditions. But as temperatures rise, oil companies are starting to pay a price for climate change. And some Alaska businesses are making money off of it. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Harbaugh has the story.
A few steps outside his warehouse in Anchorage, Brian Shoemaker asks me to do a little pretending.
Imagine for a moment you've just landed in a helicopter out on the tundra, and you're about 100 miles from anywhere, and it's costing you $1 a second to be here. This is what we do.
We picture ourselves on the remote North Slope, near Alaska's biggest oil fields. There, every winter, companies build hundreds of miles of ice roads. Roads literally made of ice, essential for moving the massive equipment used for oil exploration. But oil companies aren't allowed to build ice roads until the fragile tundra is sufficiently frozen. And scientists say freeze-up is happening up to 2 months later than it did in the 1980s.
Okay, so we're going to find a spot.
That is a huge drill.
Pretend that this is the center line of an ice road.
Shoemaker has developed technology that monitors when the ground freezes, pinpointing exactly when ice road season can begin. To demonstrate, he drills into the frozen soil and inserts a blue and yellow temperature monitoring cable. He hooks it up to a small solar-paneled box. This sends temperature data to the internet via satellite. Using this device, Shoemaker says companies can squeeze the longest possible oil exploration season into steadily shrinking winters.
Usually with our technology, we can get folks out there days to weeks early. And so it translates into huge cost savings.
State regulators say Shoemaker's technology has actually helped lengthen ice road seasons in recent years. His startup is called Beaded Stream, and he isn't alone. Oil companies now help support a cottage industry of consultants and product manufacturers in Alaska, all providing workarounds for the fact that the frozen ground they rely on to produce oil isn't so frozen anymore. Although Shoemaker says when he talks to customers, he doesn't bring up why temperatures are rising.
I'm not debating what's happening. What are we going to do about it?
Multiple oil companies contacted for this story turned down interview requests. But climate change is so present in Alaska today that the industry's top lobbying group acknowledges it's creating problems. Josh Kindred is with the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
It is ironic, and it's challenging for a state that is so dependent on resource extraction, but is also really feeling the impacts of climate change.
For Kindred, the idea of stopping the state's oil production to address climate change is unthinkable.
It'll be interesting to see how we navigate this. I don't want to call it a conundrum because I do think there's an opportunity for success here. But what is our role and how do we do it? Is Those are very difficult questions.
Meanwhile, oil companies keep finding ways to adapt. Ed Yarmak runs a company called Arctic Foundations, which makes devices that literally refrigerate the ground. The company was founded in the 1970s. The oil industry has always had to incorporate special engineering to work around permafrost. But Yarmak says rising temperatures mean his product is really starting to come in handy.
To be honest, climate change is pretty good business for our company because we're in the business of making things colder. And climate change is warming things up in Alaska.
On the North Slope, oil companies built a vast network of roads, pipelines, and buildings on top of permafrost. But permafrost temperatures in the Arctic have been rising for decades. Yarmak says thawing ground on the North Slope can start to cause problems.
The doors start to stick. The sheetrock cracks. The floor isn't level anymore. Things aren't the way that they planned them.
That's where Arctic Foundations comes in. In the company's Anchorage warehouse, guys in protective goggles are manufacturing thermosiphons, long metal tubes filled with a refrigerant. When they're finished, these are partially buried in the permafrost to keep it frozen. Yarmak shows me the top part of a thermosiphon, which is covered with a dense array of tiny fins.
It's where the heat comes out and goes to the air.
Yarmak says each is custom made and can cost up to $10,000. Oil companies have installed thousands of them across Alaska's Arctic. If the state continues to warm as projected, he expects to be in business a long time to come. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, what happens when the ferry system is cut back?
Having affordable access on and off an island, that's huge. That can have a tremendous economic impact on a community.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. And by Raven Alaska. Raven now provides Alaskans with the day over, a 24-hour stop in any major hub along the way to a destination, including Anchorage, Kotzebue, and Bethel. More information at ravendayover.com.
The Alaska Marine Highway System appears to be phasing out its fast ferries. One is in long-term storage, and the other will join it this fall. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Sitka resident Mim McConnell's family car has an ignition problem, but the dealer is in Juneau, and the only way to get it there, the ferry system, doesn't sail very often anymore.
I cannot affordably get that car over to Juneau to get it repaired and then get it back here. There's no quick turnaround, for one thing, so I haven't even bothered getting it fixed.
The realtor and former Sitka mayor is one of many coastal Alaskans dependent on the marine highway system. She's among those who have come to appreciate the fast ferries, which shorten sailings, allowing such a trip to happen in a day or two.
Having affordable access on and off an island, that's huge. That can have a tremendous economic impact on a community.
Fast ferry service has become less frequent in recent years, and soon it will be gone altogether. That's because a pair of slower, short-run Alaska-class ferries, or ACFs, will begin sailing next year.
Once we have two new ships, it's very difficult budget-wise to maintain the existing fleet.
Captain John Falvey is general manager of the Alaska Marine Highway System. It's reduced sailings as its funding's been cut. He says the fast ferry Fairweather will sail its usual southeast routes this summer, connecting Juneau to Sitka, Haines, and Skagway. It will then switch to Prince William Sound in the fall, linking Whittier, Valdez, and Cordova. A draft schedule shows it leaving service mid-November. It will be tied up for the winter, with no plans for its return. But Falvey says nothing is final.
We'll have to see budgetary-wise where we are once we get at least one ACF running May 1st of 2019. That's our goal.
The two new ferries are being built at the Ketchikan shipyard. The Hubbard and the Taslina will connect Juneau, Haines, and Skagway, one of the routes the Fairweather sails. While it will be laid up, the ship will be kept ready for use. That's the case for its sister ship, the Chenega, which was tied up 2.5 years ago. The state paid about $160,000 for the first year the Chinigo was in storage. The state sold another tied-up ship, the Taku, for scrap earlier this year, but Falvey says it has no immediate plans to sell either vessel. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
And with that story on the fast ferries, stations across Alaska say goodbye to Ed Schoenfeld, whose last day of work was yesterday. Schoenfeld is retiring after nearly 15 years as a Coast Alaska Regional News Director and almost 19 years at the Juneau Empire prior to that. KCAW's Robert Woolsey caught up with Schoenfeld to get some parting thoughts and wisdom from one of Alaska's most enduring reporters.
So, of course, Ed Schoenfeld is working on his last day of work, putting the finishing touches on a story about the likely demise of the fast ferries. If reporters weren't so skeptical about almost everything, it would almost be sentimental.
Weren't you and I doing news back when Tony Knowles unveiled the fast ferries?
We certainly were. I remember turning down the option of riding the first fast ferry, the Fairweather. I think it was from Ketchikan to Juneau on its kind of maiden shakedown voyage because I had too much else to do and I didn't have money in my budget to go to Ketchikan to catch up with them.
Schoenfeld eventually urged another Southeast reporter to take that ride, setting the pattern for how he would run the regional news desk at Coast Alaska, the five-station consortium, including KCAW in Sitka, KTOO in Juneau, KRBD in Ketchikan, KFSK in Petersburg, and KSTK in Wrangell. Schoenfeld is the uber collaborator, backfilling our newscasts with regional stories and sometimes actually filling our chairs when we went on vacation.
When I'd go to a town, I'd ask the people at the station, you know, what's the spot everybody goes to for breakfast or lunch or, you know, after work drinks or whatever. And I would go there and have breakfast or lunch or whatever. And if I could join a conversation, I would. But a lot of times I'd just sit there and listen to hear what people are talking about.
Schoenfeld has helped break in many young journalists with his get-out-of-your-office approach to beat reporting. There's a lot more news in the field than in front of a computer screen, and a lot more hazards, like the time he was covering news in Wrangell and decided to do a feature on the town's one passionate equestrian and her animals.
She said sure, and she let one of the horses out and led it down to the road. Where people were going by rather fast. And I said, oh, no, don't do that. Oh, people in Wrangell, people out here are used to this. And so the horse kind of ran up and down the road mostly on the side on its own while I watched for traffic and felt, oh, my God, a horse is going to die because I wanted to get the clip-clop sound of its hooves. It was fine.
Schoenfeld says he'll stop doing news for a while and relax, but he doesn't think he'll be out of the business for long, and he's not sure who owes whom a beer. For all the favors, tips, and collaboration he's shared with reporters around Alaska in three decades of work. Don't you keep a spreadsheet, he asks. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnosis and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Mini Cruise. A cruise ship that used to stop in Petersburg will be using the small town as its home port this summer. Its tour company is the latest of several to add the town to an itinerary peddling the authentic Alaskan experience. KFSK's Alana Elder visited the ship last week with some members of the community's tourism industry.
I did the breakfast cooking, so I knew they were here. Go to work at 4 a.m.
Sally Dwyer and Brian Lynch are Petersburg tour guides, but today they're the ones waiting to receive a tour. They're standing in front of the Safari Quest, which for a cruise ship is tiny. It has room for just 22 passengers and 10 crew members. Dwyer has actually been inside before. This was years ago when her mom was running a tour company.
Been down for cocktail parties on the after deck. It's just nice to know they're back.
In 2010, the company American Safari Cruises ended the route that used to pass through Petersburg. Other companies have come and gone over the years, most running relatively small ships that leave milder impacts on local amenities and environment compared to big ones. Dwyer says the simplicity of these cruises creates more opportunity to talk to people about their lives.
What's your cost for building? You know, how many kids are in your school? What percentage go on to college? I mean, they're interested in your community, how you live on the island.
Lynch is a retired biologist. He uses tours to teach people about Alaskan commercial fishing and wildlife.
Describe what the boats do and how we manage fisheries here and whatnot. And anything they want to know. I mean, I just love when they ask a lot of questions. Whatever they want to talk about. I mean, we even got into a big discussion on bears one time.
The two local guides swap stories about some of the passengers they've met over the years until a man in a blue vest spots us from the boat.
He says, come on up. Come on aboard. Come on aboard.
We walk into a low-lit parlor with cushioned walls and a bar nearby. Many handshakes ensue as local food suppliers, travel agents, and tour guides mingle with staff. I lose Dwyer and Lynch in the group and follow second captain Mywen Beadle on a tour of the ship.
So this is our A deck, little library area. This is super lovely when it's a bit cooler.
A map of Pacific Islands hangs above a low bookshelf. Big windows look out on the Wrangell Narrows, which the boat will travel through tomorrow. Voices from the parlor drift up a spiral staircase between the rooms and the bridge, where the captains operate the boat.
So the bridges are open at certain times of the day. It's not open at night, but the guests can come out and hang out in the bridge.
We go back outside to the top deck. There's a rack of two-person kayaks, a raft,
hot tub, seating area.
We also see stand-up paddleboards on the main deck and several more places to watch whales and other wildlife. From Petersburg, the boat will head to the native community of Cake, three wilderness areas, and a national monument. Captain Danae Blanchard says the purpose of the Safari Quest is to take people off the beaten track.
So we're taking this boat to a lot of little places that our other boats don't go to. And doing a turn day in Petersburg, you know, where we pick up and drop off guests, is a perfect opportunity for that.
Blanchard has personal ties to this area. She lived in Petersburg briefly when she was young. Her father, Dan Blanchard, used to head American Safari Cruises. He's now CEO of UnCruise, the company running this boat. She's been captaining for 3 years and says while it's still rare to have a woman in charge of a cruise ship, the industry is changing.
On the airplane today, I overheard a couple talking and they're like, we're going on this 22-passenger vessel out of Petersburg.
It took a few awkward beats for them to process what she meant by, I wanted to introduce myself because I'm the captain.
Oh gosh, I'm sorry. I didn't know what a captain of a boat should look like.
She says she's inspired by the chance to spread the word about issues affecting Alaska, like glaciers melting due to climate change. The boat may also spread the word about Petersburg. More immediately, though, it will bring money to the local government in the form of mortgage payments and taxes, and to the private sector in exchange for hotel rooms and food. For AK, I'm Alana Elder.
Now it's time for 49 Voices, and we're staying on the water with Marin, Lee, and Adak. Lee grew up fishing in Homer and is a deckhand on the research vessel Tekla.
The Tekla is a Fish and Wildlife Service research vessel, and we service the Alaska National Maritime Wildlife Refuge, which is essentially the Aleutian Islands. There's some pieces in Cook Inlet and around Kodiak, but we primarily work in the Aleutians. We are a platform for research for marine mammals, seabirds, contaminants, whales. Yeah, just the work we do is dictated by the charter. I'm doing my job from April to October, 4 out of those 6 months. So far, we've gone about 14,000 miles, nautical miles, so longer than land miles, 14,000 nautical miles since April. I guess it wasn't such an obvious thing right when I started working on the water. I didn't know I wanted to do that all the time, but as I got older and kept looking for work, I was always gravitated towards jobs that put you on the water and in adventurous remote places. My least favorite part of the job is setting the rat traps. Every port we go into, we have to set rat traps, and it's a good thing to do, but I really don't like doing it. They're very powerful. It can bite your fingers pretty good. I've never seen a rat on the ship. Only very rarely seen them on the docks, but that's one of the big issues that the refuge takes on, is rat eradication for seabird health, seabird recovery. So we can't very well be bringing rats from Dutch Harbor to these islands where we've worked so hard to get the rats off of them. So we have to close all the doors right as soon as we get in, put rat traps at the base of the tie-up lines, just keep everything safe. And this year in Dutch Harbor, we didn't almost get a rat, but I was working nights and looked up on the dock and there was a cat that wanted to come on board. So cat deterrence as well.
Marin Lee lives in Adak. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Alana Elder, Zoe Sobel, and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Grove and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Teresa Katsarilis in Bethel, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Opioids are sometimes prescribed for pain. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Never share your opioids with family, friends, or anyone at all. It may cause addiction, trouble with the law, overdose, and death. Always securely store your opioids away from children and others who may misuse them. Learn more about opioid safety at opioids.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers student and family education loans with interest rates lower than the federal plus, and they can be used at college and training programs in or outside of Alaska. Get more information at 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.